All right, good morning, everybody. This is not Emilio Despirito. This is Gregory Rice filling in for my buddy, my best good friend Emilio. He's taking some R&R down in Aruba. So filling in this week on the show. And today we got Mr. Justin Conrad. Justin is a loan officer over at North Point Bank. Justin's got about 2 decades in the biz, okay? So this guy is very sharp. He's on it. And today, Justin, we're going to talk about the importance of the monthly payment and the budget more so than the interest rate. So why don't you fly on that and riff and tell us what's on your mind?
Yeah, and no, I appreciate you guys having us again. It's good to be back. Missing Emilio, but nice to see your face and hear your voice.
Right on.
So yeah, I mean, really for me, there's a lot of talk out there, a lot of dialogue asking probably one of the most common questions, is it a good time to buy? A lot of folks are talking about waiting for values to come down or for rates to come down. And one of the biggest things that I like to promote really is your monthly budget. At the end of the day, that drives the price point, right? And really gives you a great opportunity to get in when maybe others are sitting on the sidelines. So my advice to pretty much everybody out there that has that question is it a good time to buy or should I wait? Is the best time to buy is when you're ready. I mean, quite simply, it really is. Work your budget, understand your budget. And if the rates are 2%, great. If the rates are 10%, not as great, but you're certainly within your budget when you buy. And then if the opportunity to refinance comes down the road, then you refinance and now you're in a position where you're actually under budget in a home that's appreciating. And some interesting numbers, over the last 11 years, home prices have risen consecutively. That's 11 consecutive years of home values increasing. So think about those people that waited 3, 4, 5 years ago for values to crash and all the equity they lost, all that opportunity they missed out on by sitting on the sidelines.
I think one thing people really don't grasp is that the interest rate is not permanent, Justin. People think they're signing those loan documents and that's my rate for 30 years. And you just mentioned the refinance. So do you broadcast to your audience there that, hey, it might be a crappy rate right now, but in 2 years, 3 years, we could be in a much healthier position. Do folks understand that generally, or is it kind of like, oh, this is my rate until 2054?
Yeah, I think when it's broken down and explained to them that way and they realize, that opportunity, they're educated properly, I think it clicks for most people. But I think, the average person that's out there listening to Mary and Joe, their mom, their friend, their sister, especially the media, I think, they might have a difficult time if they're just looking at it on its face, right? But when you dig down a little bit, there's some interesting statistics. There's some interesting factors that come into play, and a lot of reasons why you wouldn't wait. And there's a common saying that I've been hearing a lot too: marry the house, date the rate. I'm sure you've heard it, right? Not necessarily a big fan of that, because it's tough to marry a house and date a rate on a payment you can't afford.
Correct.
Again, always reverts back to that monthly budget, that monthly payment. You love the house, it's within your budget, then in my opinion, it's a home run. It's a good buy.
Going back to your point of the last 11 years, I was just looking at a chart on WPRI. Ted Nesi had a nice report yesterday in Rhode Island back in, we'll go to 2013, for example, the average house price was $205,000. Fast forward 11 years to today, it's 430. And I thought that was wild, but then I looked at Massachusetts for that same time frame. Okay, in 2013, their average price was 325, and now today, Justin, it's 600K.
Wow.
So it's a third higher in Mass than it is in Rhode Island. So are you seeing people that are coming from Massachusetts into Rhode Island? Do you think that that's also contributing to our crunch and our limited supply?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a factor. I think really the biggest factor in what's limiting the inventory is the fact that the rates for current homeowners over the last 6, 7 years have been so low. So most folks, when they're looking to sell and acquire a new home, think about going to upgrade your property, right? First step, you buy a starter home, then you're going to upgrade your property. Most folks, knowing they're upgrading, can digest a $400 increase in monthly mortgage payment. They cannot digest a $1,200 increase in monthly mortgage payment. And
Right.
that's what you're seeing a lot of with the big gap in interest rate between what most folks have over the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years, and what rates are like over the last really 12 months, 6 to 8 months specifically. Spiking up really, really limited folks listing their homes, obviously limited inventory. We know there's not a lot of land, there's not a lot of places to build in Rhode Island. That's been an issue. So it's tough to supply inventory when folks aren't listing their homes and there's nowhere to build.
It's a good point. How about folks? Are you seeing folks that are maybe putting down bigger down payments or trying to buy down the rate at all, or are people just tapped and, not being able to do that?
I think it varies, on average, I've probably seen a little bit more as far as rate buy down than in the past. There really wasn't a need to do that. Folks need to try to keep that payment again within their budget, try to minimize what they're looking at monthly. And the way to do that is, to buy down the rate a little bit. Has to make sense, of course, and we'll always explore those options. But as far as larger down payments, certainly for folks that are selling homes, they have a lot of
Right.
equity to transfer over. But for the first time buyer or the starter, still looking at those minimum payments, 3 to 5%.
How about owner occupants like a two family? I'm big in the multi-family game. Are you
You
seeing
are.
people that are maybe interested in like, all right, I didn't plan on living in a two family or a three family, but you know what? I can break even or something like that. Are you seeing some of that at all? Some
Yeah, I've
pivoting?
definitely seen folks exploring more options with regards to multis. Just because it's going to help offset that mortgage payment, I think more people are apt to go that route because of that option. One, two, Fannie and Freddie, we spoke about it a few weeks back, Emilio and I, they released a 5% down for owner-occupied 2 to 4 units. So that gets you off the FHA option. You can now look at a conventional option for a 2 to 4 unit. I think that's helpful. It's less money down than the 25% that was required on conventional before. I think that opens the doors for more first-time buyers to get into those multifamilies using non-FHA financing. So yes to that. I feel like I've seen a lot more condo purchases over the last 6 to 8 months as well.
One thing that's interesting, and I was just thinking about it the other day, is we'll have single families for rent, Warwick, Cranston, Smithfield, and these people are paying $3,000 to $4,000 a month just in their rent payment.
Yeah.
So people say, oh no, I'm not going to buy right now, I'm going to rent. And it's like, well, you know what? You're going to be having a similar mortgage payment. At least own the thing. At least get those tax incentives. So the rent prices are not, as attractive as they may have once been. You're
Nail on the
spending
head.
sometimes the same or even more. And it's all, I mean, it's my business, but it's going out the window as far as, you're not building anything there.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, think about that. $3,000 a month for a rent payment. It's $36,000 a year out the window. You're not realizing any appreciation. Back to data and numbers. 2020. We talked about median values. 300,000 in 2020. We're at 400 now plus, right? So we're talking over 100,000 in equity growth in 4 years. You would have spent, 120,000 in rent in those 4 years. And missed out on 100,000 in equity, that's $220,000 swing.
Correct.
Yep.
It's wild.
So just educating people on that, helping them understand that, I think is the most important thing right now because there's so much information that's negative, that's unencouraging for first-time buyers. And is it a difficult time? a little bit more difficult time than it was. You know, back in 2019, 2020, sure, there are obstacles at all times, right? But there are people buying consistently every day. We're closing loans at North Point, and you know, I want people to take advantage of opportunities that are still there.
Tell us about North Point. Why North Point? Why do people come to you?
Sure. Well, for myself, obviously, I've been doing it for a while, 27 years. I think we do a fantastic job. I've worked at just a handful of other places in my career, just three others, really. And out of those other companies, this one by far has the best direction, best leadership. Zach LeVake does a fantastic job as our branch manager there. I know you know Zach. He's really hands-on, which is great having that type of support. The products we have are amazing. You know, we have some fantastic portfolio products, investor cash flow products, bank statement programs to go along with the standard conventional FHA, VA products. And really, I always say I can only be so good. If I don't have my team behind me, that's outstanding. Things don't go as good as they should. So, you know, we have an amazing support team that's been together literally for 10 plus years. You know, our closers, our underwriters, our processors, you know, these are people that have been together for a long time. Family atmosphere, hardworking, and available. We communicate well. I think that is just a few of the things that really separate us.
And I'll add to that. I'm going to pour on his website here. North Point has funded 24 billion. That's billion with a B, okay? 77,000 families helped and 94% customer satisfaction. And that's since 2021. So you guys are pounding the pavement very hard. Again, Justin Conrad, North Point Bank. How do folks get in touch with you, brother?
Sure, you can call me direct, 401-640-6999. You can check me out on Instagram at yourfavlo, URFAVLO, or email justin.conrad@northpoint, North Point ends in an E, .com.
Awesome. Thank you, brother. And again, Greg Rice filling in for Emilio. Coming up next, we got John LaPointe from LaPointe Insurance. Justin, you know John, right?
I do. That should be a fun one.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. One of my favorite guests here, John LaPointe. You guys know him from LaPointe Insurance. John is third generation. That's one thing I love. And typically, businesses fall apart in between the second and third generation, but that is not the case with John LaPointe. John, what's going on?
Hey, Greg, thanks so much for having me on the show once again. It's great to see you here as a guest host, doing a great job as always. And yeah, happy to be here.
Thank you. And we're going to talk about something people are not too happy about. It's major insurers, right? They're raking in record profits after these big rate increases. And I felt that over the last 6 to 12 months. My renewals, especially in my rental properties, have almost been double. And the pain for home and auto insurance customers is quickly becoming investors' gain. The floor is yours, brother.
Yeah, so you know, I've come on the show in the last couple of months and talked a lot about how insurance rates are going up and talked a lot about the reasons behind the scenes for that, you know. And you know, at the end of the day, insurance companies are a for-profit business. And the fact is that for a couple of years post-pandemic, they were not making profits, and at least not making profits that they were expecting to. And a lot of these insurance companies, especially the big ones, may be publicly traded, maybe not, but they have shareholders to report to. They got people that are invested in their business that are expecting returns on their investment. Insurance companies make money in more ways than one. You know, it's not just the premiums that they take in, but it's also when they take those premiums, they invest them. And if those investments aren't performing well, then that's one whole area of their revenue stream that's not performing well. And so things start to get a little bit hairy, right? And we've talked a lot about some of the things that are going on in the insurance industry, making it difficult to get insurance, period, on certain properties, certain risks. And beyond that, even when you do have options for your insurance, they're all pretty expensive. And this segment, I want to talk about kind of the flip side of this is that after these record rate increases over the last year or so, maybe even a little more than that, the numbers are starting to come in for, you know, the performance of the insurance companies. And I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal the other day. It was either Wall Street Journal or Forbes, but it was about how Berkshire Hathaway, which owns Geico, is absolutely crushing it right now. In 2023, they had something like a $3.6 billion profit on their Geico lines of business. Now that does follow a $1.9 billion loss. So of course they were looking to make drastic changes to try and kind of right the ship there, but the ship righted itself in a big way. And so, you know, at the end of the day, the house always wins, right? Like the insurance companies will still find a way to turn it around. They are a for-profit business. They've got a lot of investors in them, you know, that are looking to make sure that their investments are getting a good return. And, you know, Geico is not the only one. A lot of companies, some of which we work with, some of them we don't, but, you know, shares of Travelers closed at an all-time high a couple weeks ago, up 35% from their lows in the fall. Progressive was saying that its quarterly profit doubled from a year earlier. Its stock rose. Allstate, which is either just reported results or is about to, their stock was up. And, you know, Wall Street's kind of already pricing in the fact that these companies are making a lot of money or about to report that they're making a lot of money. And so, you know, the pendulum has definitely started to swing in the other direction to where over the last year or two, you know, rates have gone up substantially. Insurance companies have been extra strict on things. I mean, you know it, Greg, I'm sure, from, you know, you trying to get a property insured is one thing, but then what happens after that? They send out the inspector, they got a million questions for you. Everything's been really hard-nosed, like buckling down. The insurance companies are trying everything they can to make sure that what they are insuring is profitable and that the rates they're getting are adequate to make sure that they are getting those profits. You know, we're starting to see things kind of swing in the other direction. Now, in the short term, is this going to solve a lot of people's problems when it comes to what your household expenses are and the percentage of that you're spending on insurance going up? Maybe not in the short term, but it is, in a sense, it's a good sign, because insurance companies making money is good for the availability of options. You know, right now the options are super slim because, you know, it's kind of natural for a company, if they're looking at it saying we're not making a lot of money, that they're going to become more strict on things. They're going to narrow the box of what they will accept. They're going to say we only want certain things, the cream of the crop. You know, money starts flowing in, things start loosening up a little bit, and, you know, also gives the possibility that more options are going to start coming to the table. New companies might start saying, yeah, we want to get into that line of business that we weren't in before. We want to, you know, start writing business in this state that we weren't writing business in before, because they see an opportunity there that, you know, that overall numbers have kind of readjusted here, and it might make sense to start, you know, opening things up a little bit. So that's usually the cycle of things, right? I mean, when you hit a downturn in the cycle, everything gets a lot harder. Once the money starts coming back in, it loosens up, and so there will be opportunities to shop around a little bit more in the near future. If that's the silver lining in this whole thing, where insurance companies are definitely making a lot of money off of us right now. Everybody's rates have gone up considerably and probably not going to come down in the near future, but, you know, at a certain point, it's going to be kind of fair game. You know, the free market principles here will still apply. And if there's a lot of companies that are over profiting on you, somebody's going to come in and say, well, we can charge you a little less and we can still make money.
So how about this, John? So Rhode Island Energy, formerly National Grid, right? They would have to come into the state house and ask legislators for a rate increase for electric prices and gas prices. Is there something similar to that in the insurance business in each state?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Insurance is regulated at the state level. So insurance companies can't just increase their rates. You know, they can't just say, we're taking a 10% in rate increase, so be it, right? The rates have to be approved by the Division of Insurance, and they're regulated at a state level. And so, you know, we do benefit from being in a pretty consumer-friendly state in Rhode Island, actually, you know, where the DOI is not particularly, you know, quick to approve rate increases without doing their due diligence and making sure that there's
Right.
good reason behind it. You know, there's something to be said for if that's too strict, right? That's where the options start becoming limited. If an insurance company is saying we need to take a 10% rate increase or else we're not going to be turning a profit, well, you know, if that gets denied, then their only other recourse really is to stop writing new business. They got
Stop
to
doing
stop the
business, right?
bleeding, right? They got to stop the bleeding because they're saying their rates aren't adequate. So, we've seen that happen in a couple of states. You know, that's part of the reason why California ended up in such a really horrible situation that they did in their insurance market. You know, yes, wildfires, weather-related events, a bunch of other factors are to blame in that state. So you can't just pin it all on the DOI by any means. But you know, that did have a role in that, where the Division of Insurance, Commissioner of Insurance, not agreeing to rate increases had caused some insurers, major insurers, to flee the state, saying, we're just not making money here. If we can't get a rate increase, we're not going to do it. We'd rather just not, because we're losing money here. So that's the kind of thing that, you know, the Division of Insurance has to be careful of, because having options available is just as important as making sure prices are fair for consumers. So it's definitely not a job that I envy, you know, and I think that, you know, our state does a really great job with it and trying to balance, you know, insurance companies being able to still do business in the state, but also, you know, not allowing them to run away with, you know, rates being like way higher than they need to be. So yes, you know, that the bureaucratic legislative aspect of things comes into play, and that does take time. You know, that's one thing that slows the whole process down a little bit, because, you know, if an insurance company wants to take rate and they feel as though they need to, if it takes longer for them to do that, it might take a little longer for them to see the numbers they're looking for in the state, and then for things to readjust. So it's not an easy nut to crack, but I think it's, you know, while we are paying more for insurance, if you want to look at the bright side of it does mean that, you know, what comes up must come down, and the reverse is also true. So I think that eventually, you know, we're going to see things start to balance off a little bit here. And so while we're taking it on the chin right now, rates will probably stabilize a little bit towards the end of the year here. And then going into 2025, I think we, you know, we're going to be adjusting to new life where premiums are a little bit higher, but the options are going to be available, and we're going to be able to find those diamonds in the rough for our clients, where right now the options are just super limited, you know. And that's a frustrating part of things. When I get, you know, somebody reaches out to me, I'm buying this investment property, I'm buying this home, it's, you know, beautiful, look, place looks awesome, and I've got like two companies that are willing to entertain it. It's like, you know, come on, it would be awesome if we had 10 like we did a few years ago. Even if it means that the rates are a little bit higher, you just have options to shop from, you know. You got somebody else that's gonna come in $300-$400 a year less. That makes a big difference for a lot of people, you know. It's that's
100%.
not a small amount of money. So yeah, you know, everything I've been saying, we focus on property insurance a lot on this show, but the same goes for car insurance too. You know, those are probably going to impact more people. You know, not everybody owns a home, but if you drive a car, you certainly know you need car insurance. And you know, everybody's been seeing that rate increase over the last couple of years. Things are going to start to get a little bit better there too. I certainly think they will, because if companies are making money, there's going to be an opportunity to save. You know, that you can't run away with it forever.
Correct. Good point, John. And How do folks get in touch with you? I know you got your website there. Is that your preferred route these days?
Yeah, I mean, you can always just plug LaPointe Insurance into Google. We should come up. You can reach our office at 508-678-8341. You can drop us a line by email as well. It's lapointeins.com. And, you know, we're happy to help. I think that the most important thing you can do as a consumer is to ask questions and try and get the information that you can to make good decisions, because,
yeah,
you know, you don't know if you don't ask. You know, if you just keep paying your insurance renewal year after year without bothering to ask, like, hey, are there discounts that I could be getting? Could I shop this around? Situations change. What else can we be doing here? You know, you're going to be stuck footing the bill. And now more than ever, it's definitely worth asking the question, you know, is it possible that you, despite your rate increase, you're actually still getting a fair price compared to what else is out there? Sure. You know, that's definitely possible. But, you know, if you've been with the same company for a couple years now and you've seen that rate go up, you know, 50-100% in the last 5-10 years, it's not unheard of for some people. You know, that's something we can work with. There's probably something better out there for you. And, you know, even if it's not right now, it's the kind of thing that, like I said earlier, coming into the end of this year, next year, I think things are going to open up a little bit more, and it's going to be a prime opportunity for people to shop around and see what they can get up on the market. Is there a better option? Because I certainly think there probably will be some more options, you know, coming into end of 2024, beginning of 2025.
Awesome, bro. Thank you. And thank you to your heavy hitters behind you. You got Rick, Albert, Ethan, and Bubba. I love Bubba. What a good name. So thank you to the fellas over at LaPointe Insurance. And coming up next, I'm going to be freestyling. I got a segment to myself to talk about House Bill 7304. They're trying to delay, John, how long it takes for a landlord to raise rent. So you might want to check that segment out. Once again,
I can't wait to hear it. That's going to be just another one bites the dust, right? And just another hurdle for landlords. But
that's right.
You know, but you guys keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you, brother. And again, LaPointe Insurance. So thank you again, John. Talk soon.
You bet. Thanks, Greg.
All right, everybody. Greg Rice here from Nexus Property Management. And thankfully, I got this segment to myself. It's a good time. It's a good opportunity to talk about this very, very terrible bill. Okay. And typically, we don't want to jump out in front of people and talk politics or anything of that nature. But this bill, to me, really just pushed the envelope over the cliff. Okay. It's House Bill 7304. That's H7304. And it's in the General Assembly now in Rhode Island. And it's introduced by Representative Stuart Morales, Boaz, Sanchez, Knight, Alzate, Potter, Ackerman, Ahello, and Speakman. All right. And what it is it's increasing the time frame for landlords like me and you to increase our rent on month-to-month tenancies. Okay. Now, currently, if you have a month-to-month tenant, you can raise your rent with 30 days notice, right? So say it's February 27th, you can raise your rent for April 1st and tell the tenant, hey, this is your new rent price. This bill is trying to change that from 30 days to 90 days, 9-0, 3 months, an entire season. So if today's February 27th, I can't raise my rent for April 1st. I can't raise it for May 1st. I got to raise it for June 1st. And it gets better. And this is where I do acquiesce. I am not a uncompromisable man. Okay, I do have a heart. But this topic also is tough. 62 and older folks that are elderly tenants get 60 days. That's the current law now. That would be changed to 120 days, 4 months for elderly tenants. And that's something that I do acquiesce on. I believe the elderly folks, a lot of them are on fixed income. Okay, they may live alone, They don't have the same access as a young, able-bodied person does to get out there, hustle up another job, bing, bang, boom. There's a lot more variables in their life. So with that, I believe that there is a compromise to be made. But back to the original topic here of traditional market rate tenants, people that are young, that are working, their families, their couples, their roommates, giving them 90 days is not fair. It's just not fair. And landlords, as I talk about on my YouTube channel all the time, we are the last ones to get paid, folks, if at all. So you're the landlord. How many people are coming knocking on your door on a daily basis? The bank wants their mortgage. The city wants their taxes. The insurance companies want their premiums. The utility companies want their gas and electric monies. The property manager wants their cut. The maintenance vendors and handyman want their dough. Okay. The list goes on and on. And I'm not even talking about evictions. I'm not talking about lawsuits. I'm not talking about your accountant. I'm not talking about none of that. Just the regular daily expenses. We are the last ones to get paid, folks. And every single month, I am paying thousands and thousands for each house out the door, regardless if I've collected those monies yet, regardless of that. So, to add another hurdle to delay the money that is rightfully mine and say, oh no, Mr. Landlord, Mrs. Landlord, you need to wait until June to get your money. That ain't right. Because you know what? My taxes have doubled in Woonsocket. Okay. My insurance premiums have doubled instantly. Okay. I need to be able to get that money in the door and out the door as quick as possible. If I cannot do that, then I cannot continue to invest in my properties, to buy more, to renovate. Look at my beautiful church in Woonsocket, 32 high-end apartments coming online in a very downtrodden neighborhood in the Fairmont section. And thank you to former Mayor Lisa for supporting that project from day one. If I didn't have the ability to control my ship the way I do now, I wouldn't be able to do this, these types of things. So delaying my time to 90 days, 120 days, it's just another wrench in an already difficult equation. Now, I did say that I have a heart, and that is true. We need to empathize with folks that are experiencing very, very high increases in rent. The rent prices in Rhode Island have gone up roughly 100% since I've started here in 2013 at Nexus. That's a big jump, and wages are not following those same trajectory. So people are forced to work second jobs. They're forced to shack up with friends, maybe a boyfriend or girlfriend they don't like, but they got to split the bills, right? People are making ends meet. However, my point here is that I don't have the obligation to meet your income. You have the obligation to meet my rent price. And if you can't afford it, you can't afford my rent of $1,500, of $2,000, then maybe you shouldn't live in my apartment. Maybe you shouldn't even live in that city or town. Okay, maybe you're outside of your means. Maybe you need to push further away from the city and get a cheaper rent. The landlord should not be responsible for folks that are struggling. We are already responsible for enough. Okay, enough of people that are knocking on my door, my email on a daily basis. They want their money. They don't care if I can't pay. And unfortunately, that's how I look at the situation with rent prices. The rents have gone up because expenses have gone up, people. Expenses have gone up. Landlords are not greedy fat cats made in the shade. We are really scraping the bottom of the barrel sometimes to make these payments and make sure that we don't lose our properties. Okay. So these prices going up for tenants are a direct correlation for prices going up for landlords. I can't stress that enough. we're not making record profits like insurance companies are right now, like John LaPointe was just talking about. We're treading water at best. And people that are buying rental properties now, God bless them. With those numbers and those rates, they need rents that are astronomical just to get across the finish line every month. It's not like when I started buying in 2015, 2016. So just keep this in mind, folks. The government trying to get in and just make it a little bit harder for you and I. And I will not be standing for this bill whatsoever. The only acquiescence I have is with the elderly folks. And other than that, I don't want to hear it. So thank you for listening to my, I think, very thought out rant here on House Bill 7304, and get involved, start speaking, start writing testimony, or else these bills are just going to fly across their desks and get approved. And you're not going to find about it until Channel 10 or Channel 12 does a story. So don't wait until it's too late. Again, thank you to all of our guests on today's show. This has been a good one. And keep staying informed, keep staying involved. And coming up next, we got Jennifer Jaber from RI Blogger. All right, everybody, my favorite guest is with us now, Jennifer Jaber from RI Blogger. Jen, we're going to talk about the top five early March events. What's going on out there?
So if you're looking to get into the St. Patrick's Day spirit, we do have a separate post coming out about parades and stuff, but Saturday, March 9th is the Lucky Gnomes All Ages Paint Class from 2 to 4:30 at Paint and Vino in Pawtucket. Your reservation includes two complimentary beverages of beer, wine, or soda, a super fun atmosphere, and all the supplies you need to complete your St. Patrick's Day themed picture. There's also two free parking lots close by and group seating available. So if you want to do it with a group, you just call ahead and let them know and they'll sit you all together. Saturday, March 9th is the Who Done It, and an improvised murder mystery at the Contemporary Theater in Wakefield. Actors will weave webs of secrets of deception and mystery as you wind your way through a different mystery each Saturday. And it's actually until March 23rd. So I believe there's one or two more Saturdays in there. And every week is a different mystery, so you'll never know what's going to happen. If you are interested in the local art scene or a local singer-songwriter yourself, you can head to Pivotal Brewery on the first Thursday of each month from 6:30 to 8:30 for a songwriter showcase. It's open mic style. You can enjoy local beer with incredible local talent. Signups begin at 6, and it's a first-come, first-served basis. So if you're looking to sing, make sure you get there early. And come and share your talent and enjoy watching the many talented local artists while sipping on some incredible local beer. Every Friday night, you can head to Warwick Center for the Arts at 10 p.m., which is late. So it's Bring Your Own Improv's Caffeinated Insomniacs comedy show. So if you're looking for something to do late night on a Friday, this is for you. The show is designed for teens and adults, and it's an improv interactive show. So voluntary participation is welcome, but not mandatory. You can join on stage and get involved or just applaud for your favorite actors or scenes. And just a great way to see, again, more local talent and stay immersed in the Rhode Island art scene. And speaking of artists, last but not least, Thursday, March 14th is the Whalers Winter/Spring Field of Artisans series. It's the second Thursday of every month, and it actually goes until May. So if you can't get there for March, there's one in April, one in May. It's 5 to 9 p.m., and you can join local artists in the expansive Whalers Tap Room while sipping on your favorite local beer. Field of Artisans is a group of rotating and carefully curated artists and artisans of all sorts, and again, it rotates. So the shows are 3/14, 4/11, and May 9th are the remaining shows. So there's three chances to get there.
Looking at your website, Jen, and I'm sorry, did you have one more?
Nope, that was it.
Yeah, I'm looking at your website, and it is so polished. It is so neat and organized, and all of these events, right? I'm here in March, are so diversified, right? You got Rhode Island Craft Beer Week. You got the Winter Sleigh and Wagon Rides. You got Sticks Pizza. You got the Live Improv, Everett's Open Stage. I mean, there is something for everybody on here. And it's good stuff, too. It's not ragtag. got Casey and the Sunshine Band at Twin River. That's exciting. I mean, this, you've come a long way. I have to say that. This is tremendous.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
This is awesome. And it's almost like, you know, I don't want to compare it to Ticketmaster, but it's a similar thing where it's like, all right, here's my dates. Here's what I'm interested in. Here's my radius, right?
Yeah.
And boom, this is what you got. And how could you not find something?
Yeah.
Taco night.
Taco night.
Trivia night. Frozen, the musical. Trivia, jazz, old time jams at Crook Point. It's just like, how could you not find something?
And I'm trying right now to focus on just because like the still, I guess Rhode Island's kind of off season if there was one as far as like,
right,
you know, tourists and stuff. So I'm trying to find those weekly events too. And if you know of any, feel free to let me know or email just so you know that you can be like, oh, every like Tuesday taco night, Wednesday wing night. Those are always fun too. Just a lot of trivia right now too. Not that I'm good at trivia.
Awesome.
I'm not good at trivia, but it's fun. I like going.
Yeah, and it's just about getting involved. And I think a lot of people are, you know, sitting home and they're like, oh, I don't want to go to the bar. I don't want to go to a restaurant, but they don't know where to start. Or maybe they're dating or they're, you know, them and their spouse are trying to spark things up again. There's so many options that it doesn't have to be the old same humdrum things that people have been doing forever. And it's, I mean, open mic comedy, that's one of my favorite things to do. I'm not going to go up on stage, but you know what? I'll go there and listen, hang out for a couple hours and get a laugh. And, you know, I'm all about the memories and the small little moments. And your site here gives people access to all that on a daily basis. It's amazing.
Thank you.
So again, folks, Jennifer Jaber, RI Blogger, we'll check you out, www.riblogger.com. Any last words, Jen?
Nope. I just said, keep your eyes open for, we'll be putting up our St. Patrick's Day parade guide. We're coming out any day now. So that's always a fun one. But other than that, no, just, you know, if you have any events, feel free to send them to Jennifer at riblogger.com or you can actually submit them right on the website. And yeah.
Awesome. Very good. Well, I'll talk to you next week, Jen. I'll be filling in as Amelia will be in Las Vegas.
Thank you. Well, have a great week. I'll see you next week.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, everybody. That wraps up today's Spirito Team Radio Show. A big thank you to our guests, Mr. Justin Conrad over at North Point Bank, John LaPointe at LaPointe Insurance, Jennifer Jaber at RI Blogger, and again, me, Gregory J. Rice, J for John, at Nexus Property Management. We'll be back next week again. I'll be hosting 2 weeks in a row as our good friend Amelia will be in Las Vegas for an Engel and Volkers conference. So once again, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Despirito Team Radio Show.